Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I am thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week David Vine. David is an assistant professor of anthropology at American University in Washington, D.C. He is the author of the book Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military Base on Diego Garcia. And he is the author of a new article at Tom Dispatch called Where Has All the Money Gone? How Contractors Raked in $385 Billion to Build and Support Bases Abroad. Since 2001. You can find David Vine at davidvine.net. David, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks so much, David. Great to be with you.
How many exactly or approximately or officially bases does the United States have in other people's countries?
It's always been a very difficult question to answer. The Pentagon itself doesn't even know for sure. For quite a while, the best guess was that the total easily exceeded 1,000. By the Pentagon's accounting, the number is somewhere between 700 and 800 base sites outside the 50 states in Washington, D.C. But that total didn't include any of the bases in Afghanistan, didn't include any of the bases in Iraq before the bases in Iraq were closed. There were, at one point, as many as 560 bases in Afghanistan, and of course, many of those are in the process of closing, or some have closed, but we don't know the total there. So right now, I would say the best estimate is somewhere around 1,000.
And does the Pentagon not want to say, or does the Pentagon literally not know, and how could that be?
I think a little bit of both. Surely there are secret bases, and those, of course, are kept off the annual accounting of bases that the Pentagon releases. But literally, in Afghanistan, for example, the Pentagon doesn't know. Nick Turse has done some great reporting on this for Tom Dispatch, and he's made repeated inquiries with the U.S. forces in Afghanistan, a variety of answers, often ranging by the tens, if not the hundreds, in the estimates that he's been provided on the number of bases in Afghanistan. So in some cases, it's a matter of secrecy and disclosing the location and the identities of bases. In other cases, it's just ineptitude, I guess, what we might call it.
Never underestimate that. Is this a total of bases at which U.S. troops or contractors or mercenary or secret personnel are, or is this a total of bases that officially belong to the United States? So if a country sets up a base and allows the U.S. military to use it, is that in the count or not?
It's a very difficult question as well, how you define a base and how you define a U.S. base, for that matter. In Honduras, for example, where I've done some research for a book I'm finishing up now about the 1,000 or so bases overseas and their various effects, I went to Honduras and visited a base that's been in existence since the early 1980s that was used as part of the Contra Wars and the wars in Central America during the 80s. This is clearly a U.S. base, but if you go there today, you will be told the United States does not have a base in Honduras. It actually does show up on the Pentagon's list, but you'll be told firmly that this is a Honduran base and that we're simply guests there. This is an example of sort of the linguistic games that are played. And there, too, the Pentagon does not have a consistent answer for what defines a U.S. base, what defines a base. So you have people in Honduras telling you one thing, on lists the base in Honduras as a U.S. facility. So it's extraordinarily vague, and that's why, you know, really won't be able to come up with a firm figure on total U.S. bases overseas. But I think that the important point is really to focus on the U.S. military presence overseas. Definitions, legality aside, legality is important. It has implications for forces commit crimes overseas. It has implications for, you know, if a foreign government wants the United States to leave. But what's most important really is the nature and the size of the U.S. presence on other people's land.
So we're guests in some of these places. It's funny, we apparently don't like guests in our country. When the president of Ecuador suggested a base in Miami in exchange for the U.S. having a base in his country, that was not, they were not welcomed as guests. So in terms of how many troops can we guesstimate?
It's somewhere around 1 million, and that's by the latest Pentagon figures that I've seen. And that includes U.S. military personnel, so troops and Department of Defense civilian personnel. And on top of that, you have family members. So the U.S. presence overseas is quite substantial, but it does range from places like Germany and Japan and South Korea, even Italy, Britain, where there are still thousands of troops, other personnel, and contractors, as you mentioned, their growing presence actually overseas, to countries where there are just a handful of troops. There are, you know, Kenya, for instance, as far as we know, there are probably somewhere around 100 U.S. troops in Kenya right now. In other places, there are even smaller contingents.
By any of these measures, is the U.S. presence, the military presence abroad, growing or shrinking? Did it grow or shrink when Bush was president? And similarly, what's happened since Obama's been president?
It's been some of both. And I think right now, in the past couple years, as part of the effort to cut the debt and part of very actually encouraging move to cut the size of the Pentagon budget for the first time in a decade after pretty much unprecedented expansion in the Pentagon budget in the Bush years, there is an effort to grow size of the military, especially the Army and the Marines. That includes cuts to troops deployed overseas, although mostly in Europe at this point. The story of whether troop deployments and the number of bases, for that matter, have increased or shrunk over time is a complicated one, more broadly, in that we've seen developments in both directions. During the Bush years, of course, as part of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, there were significant expansion in the number of troops abroad, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan, and in surrounding countries, especially in the Persian Gulf, where we saw a very significant increase in the number of bases, large military installations, and troops to go with them. At the same time, we have seen, again, cuts mostly in Europe. So the closure of bases in Europe, the reduction in the number of forces in Europe, although at the same time, they're still bases, new bases being built in Europe quite bizarrely as we close bases in places like Germany and Italy. We're still building new ones. And as part of the sort of much ballyhooed Asia pivot, the Obama's Asia pivot, we're seeing an expansion in the number of bases and troops some places in parts of Asia. It's actually a shift that's been going on since at least the beginning of the Bush administration. It's not really Obama's pivot at all. It's a long-term shift. And we've also seen, and this is something I've written about for Tom Dispatch about half a year ago or so, we've seen an expansion in the number of small bases, bases that are sometimes referred to as lily pad bases. Some of the major bases, very large sort of city-sized bases we see in places like Germany, Japan, South Korea, some of them have closed or consolidated into mega bases. We've also seen the expansion in the number of these small bases, lily pad bases, in places where there hasn't been a U.S. military presence before or there hasn't been in decades. So we see an expansion in the number of these lily pad bases in places like Africa, Latin America, and Asia being another, although also in Central Europe and Eastern Europe.
This is what strikes me, is the number of countries seems to increase. We hear about troops going into Australia, and as well as new construction in Guam and South Korea and around Asia, and ongoing in Japan. And we hear about troops going into Africa, into a large number of countries. And we watch sporting events, and we hear the announcers thank the American servicemen and women, whatever that service is, for viewing from 177 nations. And 177 nations strikes me as most of the darn nations that there are in the world. Am I wrong that the count of nations in which there are U.S. troops is going up, and that it's most of them?
I think that's absolutely accurate. Yes. Again, while there right now is some decline in the number of troops overseas, the breadth of the U.S. presence globally does seem to be expanding. Africa, again, is a prime example where we're seeing the increasing presence of U.S. troops and the construction of new bases in places that, you know, many people would have difficulty placing on a map. Countries like Niger, Burkina Faso, mentioned Kenya, Ethiopia, the Seychelles, all home to new U.S. bases established just in the past few years. The total number of nations in which U.S. troops are located does seem to be expanding. Again, in many of the countries, the overall presence is small, but I think even relatively small deployments are ones we should be concerned about, because a small deployment can very easily be the nucleus for a much larger deployment or and in some cases a much larger base presence. So if we're told, you know, oh, it's just a small group of trainers, small group of advisors, we should be skeptical of that. Of course, you know, we've heard that language in the beginnings of the war in Vietnam. So even small presence is one to be concerned about.
And what is the purpose, both real and official, if they're not identical, assuming that anyone has been compelled to provide an official purpose for this incredible presence of a million armed troops in other people's countries around the globe, in places where presumably they're not there for something that would be called a war. What drives this, really? And what does the Pentagon and the White House and the Congress say drives it?
That is the million-dollar question, I think. The Pentagon and the White House and the Congress say a number of things. Broadly, you know, bases outside the United States have been justified since World War II as being in existence to provide global security and regional security and to ensure peace and the like. And I think part of what I'm looking at in my new book is that argument. I think very rarely have people been forced to explain exactly how that is the case, how bases overseas make the world a safer, more peaceful place. It's just sort of been asserted without evidence to support such a claim. So it's one I'm taking on. More recently, the justifications for most bases come, not surprisingly, from the war on terrorism, whatever language the Obama administration and others want to use. But the threat of terrorism has become a major justification for U.S. bases and troops overseas. Counter-narcotics activities is another major justification, especially in Latin America. And, of course, there's China. Very rarely will anyone come out and say that's why the U.S. presence in Asia is increasing, but it's clear that that's what's on the minds of people in the Pentagon and in the elsewhere in the national security apparatus. Why are these bases and troop deployments really there? I think the answer is very complicated, and it's not always a rational one or one of strategy. Sometimes, you know, many of these bases have been in existence since World War II and the end of World War II and the beginning of the Cold War, and have just stayed in existence out of sheer bureaucratic inertia. That once the base is established, especially overseas, it becomes very difficult to close them down. But at the same time, I think bases overseas have been a major part of maintaining U.S. control and geopolitical domination in the world since World War II. It was a major part of U.S. strategy in confronting the Soviet Union. And after the end of the Cold War, it remained a major part of U.S. global political, military, and economic strategy. And the way I've been thinking about this expansion in the number of small bases, of lily pad bases, is that in an era when China and Russia and other rising powers are challenging the U.S. position as the sole superpower in the world, while China, for example, has been using economic investments around the world to spread its economic power and curry favor with governments around the world and influence around the world, the United States, in my mind, has really been clinging to its military power, the one place, the one area where the United States remains dominant, now that, you know, our economic dominance is very much been called into question. Our military dominance remains the one area where no one can come close to touching the power of the United States. And I think the Obama administration and the Bush administration before it have used the military and growing military presence in countries around the world is a way to keep nations around the world within the geopolitical orbit of the United States, to keep them as U.S. allies. And this is a strategy that I think is actually quite a dangerous one in many ways for a variety of reasons, including that we may be getting involved in conflicts and wars that we know very little about, as well as the potential that, you know, increasing the U.S. presence overseas runs the risk of actually militarizing the planet yet more. It runs the risk of increasing cycles of militarization. You know, if China was to establish a base in Mexico, for example, or the Caribbean, how would the United States respond? How would the Obama administration and the Pentagon respond? We're doing essentially the equivalent in Asia, on top of what are already hundreds of bases that have been in place on China's and Russia's doorstep for decades now.
Right. It's hard to keep justifying more bases around China by the fact that China's relatively small investment in its military still compared to our own is provoking us. But I wonder, in the broad scheme since World War II up to the present, are there any examples where this U.S. military base presence abroad has benefited peace or justice or the social good? Not necessarily the political dominance of the U.S. government, but the people of the world. And how do those examples compare with the examples that I know exist of these bases provoking militarism and conflict and blowback?
It's a very difficult question as well. I'd actually be curious what your thoughts are on the matter. I think, first of all, bases have benefits, and we shouldn't pretend they don't. You know, who enjoys those benefits is another story. Often locals living around bases overseas have benefited. Those benefits are shared widely is another matter. Often it's been local elites, local government officials who've benefited most, both economically and politically, from bases, from the presence of U.S. bases, and often they cling to those benefits and very much want to see U.S. bases remain in place. Whether we can say bases have maintained security and peace, it's a very complicated question. And it's one, I want to take on in my book, but I feel like I'm not quite prepared to answer it, although I would be curious what your thoughts are and others who might be listening, what their thoughts are.
I'm certain you're right that there are those who profit from the bases and appreciate the bases, but there are, as you know, many cases where that's not the case, even with the immediate locals. The people of Diego Garcia, which you wrote about, were removed, so they didn't have that opportunity to benefit. The people of Vieques have been protesting and trying to finally get that naval operation out of there. I lived as an exchange student back in the 80s near Vicenza, Italy, and they tolerated the U.S. Army base there. It wasn't an outrage to them. It was relatively small. Now that they're building this massive new U.S. Army base in the same town, and it's essentially turning this whole beautiful town into a U.S. Army encampment, people are outraged and furious, and no doubt there are a few people who will profit somehow, but the people of the entire area and the entire country are against the thing, and yet construction goes ahead. There are protests in Japan when the soldiers rape a girl. There are protests in Italy when an airplane takes out a ski lift. There are certainly many cases, are there not, of the locals, and I don't just mean, 9/11 blowback for bases in Saudi Arabia, but the locals resenting the presence of the base.
Oh, absolutely. It is a widespread and consistent pattern, and you pointed to some of the most important cases. Pretty much anywhere you find a U.S. base, you will find people upset with its presence. Even a place like Germany, where probably the country in which you find the greatest support for the U.S. presence, you see around bases people quite upset with various aspects of the U.S. presence, from the noise that bases create, the helicopters, the jets, like environmental damage that the bases cause. So bases pretty consistently cause opposition and in some cases really some virulent anti-American sentiment. And you can understand why, as in the case you pointed to, Vicenza, where a massive new base is being built, the people of Diego Garcia, all of whom were removed from their homeland to create a base, although in that case quite remarkable, the people of Diego Garcia are extraordinarily generous and don't hate Americans. Instead, they just want to be able to go back to their homeland. You could understand that they're having much angrier feelings, but they don't. But you're absolutely right to point to this broad pattern of resistance and opposition to the U.S. presence, in addition to a pattern in which some, often elites, have benefited financially and politically from the presence of U.S. bases overseas.
So let's talk about that money. This is the subject of your recent article at Tom Dispatch, Where Has All the Money Gone? How much money are we talking about during this time of pretended financial crunch? Is the money still flowing into these bases abroad?
The money is still flowing. Pentagon budget, as I sort of alluded to, is very much in flux, and there are some encouraging signs that the Pentagon budget is being forced to contract as part of sequestration and as part of broader budget cuts. But this was a question that, you know, is at the forefront of my mind. You know, how much are we paying to maintain this huge collection of bases overseas? So in an article I wrote last December, I tried to look at how much we're spending on a yearly basis. In this article in Tom Dispatch, I first looked at what the Pentagon says. They, by their count, in a report they issued to Congress, they said that the United States spent in fiscal year 2012 something around $22 billion for 1 year, $22 billion to maintain U.S. bases and troops overseas. On the other hand, there's been another estimate that says the United States is spending around $250 billion with a B dollars a year to maintain bases and troops overseas. So this is a huge discrepancy and one I wanted to investigate. So I sort of dove into the numbers, to the weeds of Pentagon budget documents, and found that the Pentagon had essentially excluded large costs that are being incurred on a yearly basis, and found that a much better, although very conservative, estimate for the annual cost to support U.S. bases and troops overseas is $170 billion. So the Pentagon off by about $150 billion. In this more recent piece for Tom Dispatch, I wanted to look at who's benefiting. So we've got these, you know, $170 roughly billion dollars being spent on bases and troops overseas. Who's benefiting from this? Of course, a fair amount of that spending goes to support the salaries and benefits for troops overseas. But there are generally major contractors who are especially benefiting to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. So what I did was look at on U.S. bases to maintain the bases, to build the bases, to keep them running on a daily basis. Looked at all that spending since around the time of the start of the war in Afghanistan, and found that again, this is a rough estimate given government accounting that is just a mess and Pentagon accounting that is even more of a mess. A rough estimate is that we've spent around $385 just to build and maintain bases overseas since the end of 2001. And what I found is that a large proportion of this is going to a very small number of very large private military contractors. So a third of the total is going to just the top 10 contractors. More than half is going to the top 25. Companies like KBR, Dick Cheney, which used to be part of Dick Cheney's Halliburton, DynCorp. Companies like these, BP, are the ones reaping literally billions in contracts to build and maintain these bases overseas.
So we talk about it as private and imagine greater accountability and the magic of the marketplace, but it's actually a handful of cronies that are perhaps less accountable than if it were so-called public spending. Am I right?
I think that is an accurate assessment, absolutely. A lot of the justification for privatizing many military functions has been that of efficiency and cost effectiveness. But one of my major findings in this article in Tom Dispatch is that there's been a pattern of fraud and abuse and waste and expenses that just spiral out of control. And lack of transparency. I mean, the Pentagon, to begin with, is very untransparent, and that was one of the challenges I faced in trying to carry out this accounting exercise. But the private companies are even less transparent in most ways. So it's a very and one where we still don't know very much about how much we're spending, where the money's going, who's benefiting, in whose pockets the money is ending up.
Of course, one of a minor reason, but one of the reasons that military spending is so much less of a benefit to our national economy than other kinds of spending has got to be that so much of it is done abroad. And I don't want to say, let's spend the money at home, which sounds so selfish. And I've actually seen an argument for our base presence abroad, that it's an economic benefit to other people in the world. And yet, if we wanted to aid other people in the world economically, wouldn't there be a much more efficient way to do it than to occupy their countries with armed troops who sometimes spend their money?
Absolutely. It is a curious argument that people offer sometimes, sort of trumpeting how much money the United States is pouring into other economies, especially at a moment when the U.S. economy is so fragile. So many people are out of work in this country as they are around the world. To begin with, it's important to point out that military spending is an extraordinarily inefficient job creator. It's an extraordinarily inefficient form of economic activity. There have been studies that have shown that for every dollar that's invested in the military, an equivalent dollar will create more jobs when invested in education, healthcare, and infrastructure, for example. I think it's safe to say applies whether the spending is here in the United States or abroad. So if we want, if economic activity and job creation is the aim, military spending is really not a very efficient way to accomplish those goals.
I think, David, we needed another half hour, and we'll have to have you back when your book comes out. But in the last 60 seconds or so, what can people do? What does the future look like, and what can we do about it?
I think it's good that you pointed to some of the movements around the world in places like Vicenza, the people of Diego Garcia, that we're and the people of Okinawa, another prominent one, where people are saying, enough, that we don't want U.S. bases, we don't want this military presence, it's not making our lives better, it's not making the world safer. So getting involved in some of those movements is an important step. And then the other is saying, there are these billions of dollars that we're spending, why don't we have money for healthcare and education and housing and infrastructure? That's where all the money's going. We need to shift those investments from bases, from military force, into productive, peaceful investments here in the United States and around the world, for that matter. So demanding that sort of a shift, I think, is another critical step.
We've been speaking with David Vine. His website is davidvine.net. His book is Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military Base on Diego Garcia, and another book forthcoming. David, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, David.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.